I mean, that's a good apple. I mean, you know, Anakin Skywalker was so stinking cute in the first movie. Don't you think? If you've seen, you know, the Star Wars, was it six of them now? If you've seen those movies, he was so stinking cute in the first one. We just wanted to love him. We knew where he was going, right? We knew that Anakin Skywalker was going to end up turning into Darth Vader, you know. You know, the dark side of the Force. Come to the dark side. You know, all that stuff. We knew he was going there, but we wanted to like him so much because he was so cute. And everybody just, you know, and then they, you know, in the second movie, they found a cute actor to play him, and all the girls liked him. And so they weren't quite sure what to do with the fact that someday, you know, he's going to be this hideous villain that would kill everybody. We just, you know, they make us nervous. I mean, the Emperor, he's easy. You hate him, you know, he's a bad guy. But something about Anakin Skywalker who becomes Darth Vader, you want to like him. You want to be okay with that, and you don't like the fact that eventually he's going to become this dark villain. Edmund in The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. If you haven't seen that movie, it's a great movie from great books by C.S. Lewis. Edmund's another one of those characters that just makes me feel so uncomfortable. The witch, you know, she's easy. You look at her and you're like, oh my gosh, she's hideous, you know. She's dressed in white, but you just know, man, personification of evil. Not going to like her. She's a bad person. But Edmund's so cute. And even though he's kind of self-centered, he's a good kid at heart, and you want to feel okay with him. But, you know, when he's in that scene, when he ends up with the White Witch in the movie, in the book, in the story, and she begins to con him and basically tell him that, you know, if you'll just listen to me and follow me, you'll be okay. If you'll just do the things I tell you to do, bring your family to my house. He doesn't see through her lies. He doesn't see through her issues. He doesn't realize that she is conning him. And he ends up in a bad, bad situation. I mean, I really want to like Edmund. I really want to like Anakin. But I know that their stories are stories that are very difficult because if I like them, in the end, they're going to end up being people who are deeply harmed, deeply messed up because of the decisions that they make. We've been looking at the first few chapters of the Bible. If you have a Bible, we're going to be looking in Genesis chapter 3 this morning. If you don't have a Bible at the end of your rows, we do have Bibles for you. We'd love for you to take one, use that in reading, and if you want to take it home with you, that's great. That's our gift to you. You're more than welcome to keep that. We're going to be in Genesis chapter 3 this morning and looking at what is maybe one of the most important chapters in all of the Bible. Genesis chapter 3 deals with the fact that our first parents, Adam and Eve, are very much like Anakin, very much like Edmund, very much like Snow White. The Snow White one doesn't bother me as much, because I hate that movie, okay? So, you know, she can eat the apple, not a problem for me, but, you know, some of you girls are going, oh, Snow White, I just love her, she just, you know. But for me, no big deal. But Anakin and Edmund, boy, they just grip my heart. And I wrestle with why they make that decision to pursue the dark side, to eat Turkish delight and give up the farm. What is it about those things that draws them? Genesis 3 really helps us wrestle with that as people, helps us realize that there is a real problem. See, we've been looking at this, and I believe that the Bible deals with this in the story of God, that God has given us this incredible story. And in this incredible story, as God explains to us why we're here, how we got here, what we're all about, how this thing works, he gave it to us in story form. Now, I believe that everything in these chapters that we're going to read are true. But God didn't include everything that we needed to know, and he really gave us our foundation, our creation, our purpose, everything in our background in a great poetic story. The first four or five books of the book of Genesis would turn into a great play. If you want to put them on a stage and do them in a setting like this, man, it's a great story to tell, but it's a true story, and it helps us realize where we came from, where we're going, what we're about, and help me find my own purpose and meaning and value in life. And the first couple chapters paints this beautiful picture of a God who's the first one on his own stage. He is the God who existed before there was anything. He is the God who created all that is, and he is the God who stepped onto his stage before anything else. And he spoke, and when he spoke, the things that he spoke came into existence. And the couple of weeks ago, we looked at the fact that even this universe, everything that is created, the beauty of it, the incredible nature, the size of it, shows us that there is a God who is just awesome, who is just unbelievable. And he had to create a stage. He had to create a set that was big enough to contain his story. You know, I was listening again to some things this week that dealt with the fact that there are galaxies out there that are literally billions of light years away and millions of light years across. And those numbers just stagger my mind. They just blow my mind. I don't get those numbers. But it is God's way of saying, man, I am really big and really in control. My universe, my play, my stage, I call the shots. This is about me. And God wants us to value him and love him and be crazy about him. And so God created two people. He took, it created this beautiful garden as part of this stage. And in this garden, he created two people, Adam and Eve. And he put these two people in the garden. And the Bible tells us that God created Adam and Eve, the first two people. And God created you and he created me in his image. It says that God created us in the image of God, in the likeness of God. And last week, we kind of dealt with the fact that what that meant was that God created each and every one of us. God created you and he created me to relate to God. By having his image, we are able to have a relationship with our creator. That's a cool thing. Not only that, God created us to reflect God. As he created Adam and he created Eve, he put them in this beautiful garden, this beautiful place where they could live. And as they lived there, they were a reflection of his beauty, a reflection of his glory. And they were able to be an image so the world could see the character and the beauty and the awesomeness of God. No matter how great creation is, you and I are the crown of God's creation. We are the most important thing. We are the only thing that God created in his image. And we are made to look like God, to reflect God. But not only that, God also created us and put us on this planet to represent him. By being here, God said to Adam, he said, listen, this place, I'm going to put you in charge of it, and I'm going to have you take care of my garden. I'm going to have you take care of my planet. I'm going to have you oversee it. And he literally gave Adam the job of naming the animals. And naming the animals is so much more than just saying, okay, giraffe, dog, elephant, guinea pig. You know, it was so much more than that. By giving Adam the responsibility of giving names, what God was investing into Adam was the responsibility to oversee on his behalf. And that's our purpose. You know, if you've been here for a few weeks and you don't end up getting anything else out of this series of messages about the story of God, realize that God invited you into his story. He placed you here to be part of his incredible story, and your role in the story is to have a relationship with him, to be a reflection of him, and to represent him on this planet. That is what God placed you. That's your role in the play. But the problem is that as I look around, and I realize this, I look at this place, this paradise that God created, this beautiful place, it's not quite like that anymore, is it? I mean, you know, sometimes things kind of stink here. You know, things don't work the way they're supposed to, and things are really hard, and things are just not functional, and I struggle through all this, okay? And as I struggle through all this, the Bible gives us an answer to why. Genesis 1 and 2 tells us great place, great people. We relate to God. We reflect God. We represent God. Genesis 3 says, oops, problem. We didn't fulfill our purpose. We didn't fulfill our role. In fact, what Adam actually did in Genesis chapter 3 is Adam said, all right, God, that's all cool. I like that you put me on this planet, but as you put me on this planet, I want you to understand, I'm not really crazy about being a small part in a big story. I really want to be the star of my own show. And I want to be in control of my own destiny. I want to be my own God. I don't want anybody else calling the shots and telling me what to do. That's what Genesis chapter 3 is. And that's what we're going to look at. Genesis chapter 3. We'll begin with verse 1. And that's good, just throwing my Bible around. Genesis chapter 3. What I want to do is I want to walk through this passage, and I want to show you how this is an incredible story. And in the midst of this story, I want you to see that God, in story form, tells us why things on this planet don't quite work the way they're supposed to. He says in verse 1, now the serpent was more crafty than any other beast in the field that the Lord God had made. And he said to the woman, did God actually say, you shall not eat of any tree in the garden? And the woman said to the serpent, now hold on right there. There's problem number one, okay? First of all, ladies, if you see a snake, what do? Okay, my family is like really bad about this. My mother-in-law has passed on to my wife, who has passed on to my children, this incredible fear of snakes. When my wife was in elementary school, they went to the St. Louis Zoo. And while they were hanging out in the St. Louis Zoo, they talked my mother-in-law to go into the reptile house, which was not a good idea in and of itself, okay? Just being in a room where snakes were behind glass had her all freaked out, had her all nervous, had her all worried. But here they are hanging out in this reptile house, and this little kid had gone to a store, not Heidi or not her brother, nobody like that. This little kid had gone to a store, and when he went to the store, he bought one of these fake snakes, these pretend snakes, and he's walking around just playing with this pretend snake. You know, it's one of those ones that kind of slithered as you held it in your hands and all that kind of stuff. Walks up, my mother-in-law sees it and goes absolutely berserk. Ah! She starts running away. My wife is over in a corner just, you know, they had to put her in a straitjacket because it left this lasting impression. She's screaming. This little kid's standing here. The mother comes up and starts beating the kid going, why'd you scare that lady? He's like, I didn't do anything. You scared that lady. And, you know, my mother's in-law's over in the corner having, just breathing like crazy because, you know, snakes are not something that women. And on top of this, if a snake walked up to you and said, hello. Not a good situation. But the Bible tells us here that the serpent said to Eve. Now, we read this and we go, wait a minute, hold on. What's going on here? I don't get this. I don't understand this. I do believe that this is literally a real serpent. But the Bible also teaches us in Revelation that this serpent is being used by the power of Satan, by the power of the devil, by the power of the dark side. You can almost hear the serpent walking up going, come to the dark side. The serpent is speaking to Eve, but the Bible teaches that literally is a tool in the hands of Satan. Well, what about this? You know, is there really like a good God and an evil God that are like at war and they're at battle and one's going to win, one's going to lose? No, not at all. The Bible teaches us that the serpent, that Satan, that the devil is a real being, a created being, that God created him just like he created us. And somewhere along the line, he made the same decision that he tries to convince Adam and Eve to do. He said, you know what? I am awesome. I am glorious. I am beautiful. I really don't want to be something that sings the praises of the Creator. I want to be something that sings my own praises. And the Bible teaches us that because of that, he fell and that evil became something that was so core in his being. And now he is opposed to God. But he doesn't control this universe. He's not at war with God in a place where he could win. God is God. This serpent is a serpent on a leash. And this serpent didn't show up in a garden and catch Adam and Eve off guard. This serpent showed up in the garden. God knew it was going to come. God had placed in the middle of the garden a tree and said, don't eat from this tree. Don't eat from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. You can have any tree in the garden. You can enjoy anything here. And I've created everything. And what the serpent does is the serpent comes in and says, did God really say to you, you can't eat any of this fruit? And Eve begins to answer. And Eve says, verse 2, and the woman said to the serpent, we may eat of the fruit of the trees in the garden, but God said, you shall not eat of the fruit of the tree that is in the midst of the garden, neither shall you touch it, lest you die. Now, here's an interesting thing. What did God actually say to him, if you've ever read this text before? God said, don't eat of that tree. He didn't say anything about touching it. But you know what Adam and Eve did, or what Eve did here? She added to God's word to them. Instead of just listening to what God said, she changed it. Bad thing. We need to listen to what God says. For God knows that, verse 4, but the serpent said to the woman, you will not surely die. Listen, you, what God said won't really happen to you. Don't take his word. He doesn't want you to have fun. And you know what he subtly did? God gave them this incredible garden, this beautiful place, all the fruit to eat, and all, it's paradise. It's incredible. And one command. And Satan, instead of having Eve focusing on how wonderful God is, got her focused on the one command. But then the question, why did God do that? Why did God give a tree in the garden and a command not to eat it? And it's this simple. God created us to love him. But love is always a free response. It's a choice. You know, if you force something to love you, it's not really love. But in the midst of that love, the love that we have for our Creator is not a love of equals. It is a love of a servant to a master who's benevolent, a God who is incredible, who is over us. And God said, listen, I'm going to establish who's in control. One tree, don't eat of it. That's a way of you showing that you love me and that you will serve me and that you know that I'm God, you're not. And he put us in a situation where he basically gave us a choice. He basically said, listen, you can be God or you can be with God, but you can't do both. And he put this tree in the garden. And the serpent now has her focus not on everything that is good about God, but the one command. And we do that. I do that. And so he says to her, verse 6, so when the woman saw that the tree was good for food, and that it was a delight to the eyes, and that the tree was desirable to make one wise,